97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
And happy to be with you this morning. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Cox. It's been a fun morning so far, and if you missed that first hour, part of that interview that Mark and Kim had with Michael Weitzel, who was asked to leave St. Louis Soccer Club's match, not this past weekend, the weekend before, because he wore a Make America Great Again hat. Part of that interview you can find online, but you can also rewind and hear a condensed version of it a little after 5:20 this morning. So the Odyssey app will always help you with that. Look at you guys breaking international stories, Kim. You guys are doing fantastic work on this show. You really are.
Hey, hats off to Mark. He came across that whole story, or someone had tipped him off about that, and we had him on the show, like you just said, on Friday. And it's wild to see how much it's taken off on social media. Mm-hmm. It's not just social media. It's a lot of the major national outlets, even Fox News, Not the Bee, I think New York Post, maybe Daily Mail. Mm-hmm. I mean, a number of them have picked it up. I did hear there was supposedly an investigation into this with the Department of Justice. I'm trying to confirm that. But that would be very interesting because, you know, the actual team, City SC, they've been very quiet about this whole situation. They were asked over the weekend. Nothing.
Crickets. They're going to have to review this. They're going to have to also come up with a reason why a season ticket holder from the very start, who was not disturbing anyone, but someone came up and I would say harassed him for wearing a hat to kick him out of this game because they were so upset about this red hat. I'm guessing he wore it at other matchups, if I had to guess.
Just one, once he'd worn it, and I guess no one had complained. But, you know, the MLS rules supposedly say you can't have anything on that would suggest something as it relates to a political candidate or a legislative issue. So I don't think the hat said Trump. It just said Make America Great Again, from what I saw.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to make that argument that that insinuates that you're supporting Trump, well, then you'd have to say the same thing about people waving the pride flags, because to me, that's clearly a legislative issue. So I don't get how you can have one and not the other. If you're going to kick that guy out, then you should kick out the people who are holding the pride flags. The problem is City SC supports all that junk, and they're the ones who are also changing their logo and doing all these things during the month of June to make sure that they're showing the love and they're not going to be canceled by the woke mob.
Yep. You know, I'm also messaging some friends I have that work for Boeing to see if they're impacted by this strike. That's a pretty bad, I mean, it's a big one, so I know you've been covering it in the news. This is going to have some pretty big ramifications, considering they haven't reached where they need to be. Now, keep in mind, 2 years ago, the auto strike here in Detroit was a big deal. Boeing, that's a big deal. That is a big one. So I'm trying to reach some of my friends to see if they're out on the picket lines this morning or not. So we'll learn some of that. All right. How about we do the shortlist?
The Mark Cox shortlist.
The only other person I would like to see in 2028 run, and this is going to sound ridiculous probably coming from me, I would love to see Jon Stewart run in 2028. If we're talking about like a change agent coming from the outside that's really going to shake things up, and somebody that I feel like can speak to, you know, all people.
I think you know what I'm going to say here, Kim. Au palais. Nah, we're going to say a big pass on the Stewart Colbert ticket.
I think President Trump is frustrated. He's frustrated with Putin and Russia. He wants the war on Ukraine to come to an end. I think the American people are ready for the war in Ukraine to come to an end. And I think Putin right now is not cooperating.
Any update on those subs that were going to strategically be placed in certain areas? I don't think there is much. But then again, we shouldn't be telegraphing exactly what we're doing if there is some sort of strategy behind it. But we know that Iran learn the hard way what happens when you mess around. And I think Russia needs to understand, in order to prevent further escalation, there will be actions made. So let that be somewhat of a call to get back to that bargaining table and end this thing.
New emails, Mr. President, suggest essentially that Hillary Clinton personally approved the Russia hoax.
With Obama?
With Barack Obama. And my question is she finally going to pay for what she did, or does she get a pass again?
No, I think they should pay a price. It could be the biggest scandal in the history of our country, but it continues onward.
It does continue. Well, the fact that this sort of operation was going on behind the scenes goes to show you that the coordinated effort, the length it went to and how deep it went to, this is basically the definition of the swamp. and that it continues on is very troubling, especially after administrations are out and you're still trying to sabotage the current one, is completely, you want to talk about a threat to democracy.
And the reason it's not going to go away is because it's not a Democrat-driven issue. It's a MAGA-driven issue. And that's why it won't go away. When it leaves the White House briefing room and goes into popular culture, the White House briefing room can't control it.
That's the Epstein stuff there. I get that. Can't really control it. I haven't heard much on the Epstein, but you know, I feel like whenever the Democrats want to just kind of flame or fan the flames, that's the first thing they go to try to get the fire up a little bit higher, I think at least. So that was the short list. We have a big lineup of guests this hour. Ryan Schmelz is going to join us from Fox News Radio. And we're also going to talk to Jeff Manasso about car loan payments. I think a lot of people are wondering about that. Kim on a whim this hour, too. Kim, there was something that you sent yesterday about the students, about college campuses, what we're seeing on college campuses. And Bill Maher seems to side with Donald Trump a little when it comes to college campuses. I'm not surprised there, but good for him for doing that.
Yeah, I mean, how can you look at what's going on and what we've been seeing playing out at a lot of these major universities like Columbia University and think, you know what? Yeah, this is going in the right direction.
Yep. I think we have an audio clip of this. This is clip number 2. Let's play some of that.
Not everything, the way he's doing it, of course, is the right way. You know, to defund scientific research is not the way to do it, but I mean, our universities have been out of control for a long time. They became indoctrination factories. They forgot. There's absolutely no diversity of thought.
You know, when Bill Maher first realized this, it wasn't just right now. He realized this years ago when he went on his show and he said, I've been doing Real Time with Bill Maher or Politically Incorrect, whatever, some iteration of his style of news. And he mentioned in the 90s, we used to have a writer's room where your ideology would be split, Republican, Democrat. And I look at the ideology now, it's 95% liberal. And I realize that the people that are being hired for these positions and the ones that are out there in the market are just so left-leaning. There is no diversity of thought. And that's a problem for shows like mine. And he had this self-realization on the air. He was talking about it, and he's like, this is something we're trying to work through. And he realized part of it has to do with what is pumping out of colleges right now when it comes to writers, political writers, anything like that. And what's in the field, there are just not enough diversity of thought coming from universities. Why would that be? Well, if you indoctrinate the kids that are in these college campuses in one direction and you put them in that way, that is something that I think liberals and Democrats realized was a very important propaganda tool for them in order to further their ideology. They have to get them young and they have to get them marching orders in order to get them in the right direction.
Yeah, it's sad where a lot of these parents feel like they're doing right by their kid up until when they're college age. Then they go to this 4-year university and they come out a completely different person because they've been so indoctrinated by their liberal professors and their classmates. And it's just, it's really sad how quickly things can turn around.
Yeah. And on top of these things, I know Rush Limbaugh was the exact same way. And he was someone that was very early on talking about how college campuses were doing this. And I, back in the early 2000s, when I was going to college, realized very little of what was going on, but my mind was so set. Like I wasn't easily influenced by what the professors were trying to push on you. I was more influenced by the way I was thinking. And I wouldn't go out there and say, you know what? No, I'm wrong for thinking this. I need to take my white guilt and try to reshape my worldview in order to align with what this professor says I should align with. My thinking wasn't there, luckily, but a lot of college kids are like this. They're like, okay, in order to get good grades, I have to do what the professor tells me, and the professor is telling me this, and then now I have to reiterate these things to get these grades, and next thing you know, one class after another, that's the type of garbage they're cycling. They're telling these kids, and they don't have the same freedom of thought that college campuses used to have. And that has been a major problem. And luckily, some of this is being corrected now because it's gone so far extreme. And at the very least, I think a lot of these students realize that they have the ability to stand up and say no to this garbage without the repercussions that would normally be associated with it.
Totally.
Coming up, we have Ryan Schmelz. He's with Fox News Radio. What's Congress going to do on recess? Do they go to the beach like Joe Biden was during his presidency? The, I don't know, 3/5 of his time in the White House, just go hang out on the beach. Are they going to go dancing, but not after 10 p.m.? What exactly is Ryan Schmelz going to be doing? Or what does he say they're going to be doing? He's with Fox News Radio. And Jeff Manasso is joining us, too, from Fox News Radio. And we're going to talk about car payments, loan payments, refinancing. It's kind of an interesting trend that's going on in the auto industry. And Cam on the Whim coming up a little bit later, too. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Cox, 97.1 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Cox, joining us now from Fox News Radio. Ryan Schmelz, thank you for coming on.
Of course. How are you?
Great. You know, Congress on recess. What do they do on recess? I mean, hypothetically, they could be going to the beach every day. They could be joining a bowling league, or pickleball seems more appropriate. But what really does Congress do during recess?
Well, if you're in the state of South Carolina, apparently you spend your recess declaring your candidacy for governor. That's what Nancy Mace is doing right now. Fundraising is a big part of this. You know, and we actually got some breaking news before I came on here, where you had Leader Schumer and Leader Jeffries send a letter to Majority Leader John Thune and Speaker Johnson demanding a group of four meeting, or a big four meeting, for them to discuss the future of funding the government, because that's going to be the first order of business when they get back into town.
Big four meeting, huh? So yeah. They decide that, okay, we need to stop, collaborate, and listen, kind of like Vanilla Ice would tell them to do. And looks like they might get some work done. I think they realize, at least in the Democratic Party side, that their popularity is so low that they're going to have to collaborate and figure something out. They got no time to waste. What about Republicans during this time? They got some nominations they were trying to get through there last minute. And do they get any business done?
Well, they got a good portion of them done, but they couldn't come to an agreement to kind of speed up the nominating process for some of the more less contentious ones, you know, the ones that had a lot of bipartisan support. So right now they left town without a deal. And so the thought is that they could possibly change the Senate rules when they come back in order to go nuclear here and get a bunch of these nominees confirmed. But, you know, President Trump was pretty ticked off that Democrats, you know, kind of, as he's saying, you know, stonewalled his nominees and didn't really come to an agreement. So it's become a pretty contentious process, because, as Leader Thune points out, you know, President Trump is the only president at this point in his presidency to not have a single nominee confirmed by either unanimous consent or by voice vote. And so that's been a very frustrating process for both Trump and Thune, that they've had to kind of do this very snail's pace like process just to get these nominees confirmed.
Ryan, going back to the news you brought up about Nancy Mace announcing that she's running for governor of South Carolina, I mean, that would potentially be a really great thing. But at the same time, you think about this really slim majority that they have in the House, really, and on the Senate side. And can they afford to lose these people? Now, I understand that she, you know, likely comes from a very conservative district. But what, maybe it's too soon, but I mean, what does this mean moving forward? Is that concerning?
Well, she's still going to be able to vote, and they'll all stay and still vote while they're running for governor and all that. So, you know, what's interesting about the South Carolina race is that every single person who's kind of at the top of that ticket is either a member of Congress. There's two members running, Nancy Mace and Ralph Norman. And then you've also got the attorney general running, too. So they've got full-time jobs on top of, you know, running for governor that they're going to be doing. So they'll still have the votes. That won't be a problem. But where it does become a problem is that you have some people who are running for governors in their state. Nancy Mace is one of them, but you also got John James in Michigan. They're in very competitive districts, and they're giving up incumbency in order to run for these seats. So therefore, you know, Republicans have to pick a quality candidate. They don't have the luxury of incumbency, and that does give Democrats an opportunity to flip those seats potentially. Now, Mace's seat is like, well, it's like R+6 or something like that. So it's red, but it's not a safe red district. And John James is from a very competitive district in Michigan. So yes, these are now seats that you got to watch for, because Republicans aren't going to have the incumbent there. So yes, absolutely.
Let's look, too, at some of the challenges that CNN has been pointing at. I know rival network, but they bring the statistics out and they talk about just how unpopular the Democratic Party is right now at an all-time low. Yeah. And when you see it on networks like that, I truly believe that there is some sort of them testing the waters out with their own type of party. They want to try to use this as a springboard in order to bring revolution, to change things within their party. I feel like they use that network in that way. So do you get a feel in Washington that the Democratic Party is really in some sort of free fall and they are deadly concerned that they're going to slip into irrelevancy and their party in a couple of years will be practically bottomed out if they don't make drastic changes now?
I think it depends on who you ask, because, I think that sometimes when there's something like this happens, I think people see it as a lot of opportunity also, because you have a lot of Democrats who feel that they don't have to be pushed to the far left anymore when it comes to an issue like immigration or border security. And then I think a lot of them will say, well, we're going to try to capitalize on maybe negative poll numbers that President Trump has and see what happens. So it really depends. I mean, I think a lot of them view the field for 2028 as wide open. And I think a lot of this is also going to depend on what happens in 2026. I mean, if they fail to flip one of the chambers, that's going to be a very hard pill to swallow. And that's going to be when they really have to figure out what the heck they're doing. But if they're able to at least flip the House or flip one or two Senate seats, I think they'll see that as a good opportunity. But, it's still, we really don't know who the leader of the party is right now. And that's kind of fascinating to watch.
Yep. I think they're trying to figure out how much money they have to burn through first, and they know they're going to be burning it. Ryan Schmelz, by the way, if people wanted to find you on Twitter, someplace like that, where can they go?
Ryan Schmelz Fox on Twitter and Ryan Schmelz TV on Instagram.
Fantastic. Thanks for joining us this morning. We really appreciate the time.
Hey, always great to be on. Thank you all so much.
Joining us after the break, Fox News Radio's Jeff Manasso, too. Looking forward to that. We're going to talk cars and loan payments on 97.1 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Cox. And there's been a lot of craziness in this world today. A lot of things that seem to be going wrong. Do we just need the right candidates? Is that what we need? We're waiting for our guest, Jeff Manasso, which we'll have here in a second. But Ethan, there's that clip from Charlemagne. He's a radio show host, The Breakfast Club. He gets some popularity. In fact, I think he might have been Rush Limbaugh's last interview outside of his show. I don't think Rush did another one after that. And it was, leading into the election, the re-election for Donald Trump. So he got on The Breakfast Club. It was quite an interesting collaboration. He has an idea of who should be running here. Can we play clip number three?
Do you see yourself in 2028 voting blue or voting red? And is there anyone you might already see yourself supporting?
I really don't know. I mean, I think that there's some good candidates out there. I think that we really have to look to the governors when it comes to the Democrats. I don't think that there's any like change agents that's going to come out of nowhere and shake things up in the Democratic Party. I think it's going to end up being a governor, Josh Shapiro or a Wes Moore, or somebody like that. And they actually have a track record, right? Because you can go look at their states to see what they're probably going to end up doing on a national level. The only other person I would like to see in 2028 run, and this is going to sound ridiculous probably coming from me, I would love to see John Stewart run in 2028. If we're talking about like a change agent coming from the outside that's really going to shake things up and somebody that I feel like can speak to, all people. Plus, he's a celebrity who actually knows what they're talking about. We've seen him get legislation and stuff, passed before. Like, we know where his heart is. He'd be somebody I'd like to see really get in the race and disrupt things in 2028. Maybe a John Stewart Colbert ticket, because, Colbert's not going to have a job. He's not working.
Oh, please. All right. No, I don't really see that happening. But John Stewart did find himself advocating for 9/11 victims, those first responders that had those terrible diseases. So, I mean, he was on the right side there, sure. But keep in mind, these type of guys have, 50 staff writers telling them what to say at any given time in order to calculate what is entertaining or is going to stick. So I guess politicians do the same thing, but does it make for good policy? That's a good question, too. All right. Joining us now from Fox News Radio, Jeff Manasso. Good morning to you, sir.
Hey, Ryan. Good to be with you.
I find that the car industry is such a wild ride right now between tariffs and where they're getting their auto parts from, negotiations with the president, sales calls, electric vehicles, abandoning ship, then jumping back on it. I guess Ford's going to have a big announcement this week about electric vehicles, what they call the next Model T type of jump in the technology. So the auto industry, people have a lot of minds in it. But as an individual, I think there's a lot of people that are concerned that they may be stuck in a vehicle that's either A, going to be worth nothing or obsolete, but two, they're paying too much money because they jumped in because they thought the scarcity factor would be there. And, you know, the hype and whatever scared them into purchasing or leasing. And now they're worried they might not be in the best type of deal. People are paying for these car loans. And one of the interesting things with Fox News, you guys are looking into that in refinancing. Has that become a big option for people?
Well, it may be a great option for people, particularly if rates come down, which I guess we would expect that they're going to be coming down at some point, or at least maybe within the next 6 months. We'll see. But auto loan rates have been declining over the past couple of months, despite no change in the Fed rate policy. Remains about 4.5%, though Cox Automotive reports that consumers with really good credit are seeing even lower rates. In July, the average new auto loan rate for buyers with a 760-plus credit score dropped to about 5.4%. That's the lowest rate since September of 2022. And with auto sales slowing, at least they have, month over month. And now consumers are also expected to benefit from attractive financing offers. This is from the dealers, from automakers, who are saying, okay, well, we need to push more vehicles. We're gonna do some deals. Like Ford currently has that 0 for 0, 0, 0, 0, 0 down, zero payment for 90 days, and 0% financing, I think, for 48 months in certain models. Things like that. I mean, they're creeping in, and so there is some opportunity to save some money. But Cox reports that nearly 7% of dealer financed buyers locked in a 0% APR offer due to having good credit. The average new auto loan rate is just over 9%. Otherwise, so with great credit, that drops loan rates on average to about 5.4%. So we're waiting to see what happens at the Fed. Where leadership is ultimately coming, leadership change, I should say, is ultimately coming, and likely interest rate cuts. So we'll see. But it probably can't happen soon enough for people who took the plunge when they probably shouldn't have. So, right now, the latest that we have is a record high share of car owners now owe more on those vehicles than they're worth, pushing many to roll thousands of dollars in debt into their next auto loans. There's an Edmunds report that shows over 26% of trade-ins toward new car purchases had negative equity. Almost 33% of those underwater trade-ins had between $5,000 and $10,000.
Wow.
In negative equity. 24% owed $10,000, with almost 8% of car buyers owing more than $15,000 on those trade-ins.
I mean, obviously the interest rates are making it hard for people to buy these cars, buy these homes, things like that. No doubt that's a huge factor. But I also had heard some crazy statistic, Jeff, about the number of people who now have a car payment that's at least $1,000. That's insane. I mean, it has to be that some of these people, for lack of a better word, are just stupid. They're irresponsible. They're buying these cars they have no business buying because, quite frankly, they can't afford it. But they want to look fancy and rich, and so they buy these, really fancy new cars. And then all of a sudden, they realize, oh my gosh, I can't even afford this payment anymore.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll leave you to the opinion business, but they're definitely morons.
nice.
Yeah, $1,100 to $1,200 is the average car payment for many who took the plunge during COVID and prices. I mean, remember cars jacked up about 48%. I mean, that's what we were paying. We were paying about 48% less for vehicles, but prior to COVID. And you know, you look at a truck, for example. I'm looking at full size trucks right now, and you know, never in my life had they been, you know, $70,000-$80,000. And so, you know, you're looking for ways to save, to cut. Well, do I get one that's 2 years old? Do I wait till to see what happens at the Fed? Everybody's trying to be, you know, methodic many people are trying to be in how they approach the car buying process, which of course is a brutal and painful process, in and of itself. But, I think there's relief based on what we're seeing, is that there's going to be relief around the corner. You just have to kind of be patient, like many have, many who just sat out and said, you know what, I'm not buying a car right now. I'm just going to wait and see how the dust settles.
Yeah, I'm worried about here's the patient side, because I read different analysts and they said, okay, this is not sustainable. People are paying way too much money. They're going to be turning leases in here. Those that may have purchased, and they're trying to calculate the time out. And they said by the end of this year, there's going to be so many cars turned in because it's not going to be worth buying them, that you're going to see a flood of aftermarket cars that's going to help with demand. So the prices will have to come down for aftermarket. But here's the thing. Whenever people say things like that, they rarely happen. Like they say with the housing market, never happens. I'm worried that, just like every other person, they think, well, I can't rely on that, so I'm just going to have to bite the bullet and go with the high rate now or get the high car price now. Is there any way to time this?
Look, I think with interest rates coming down, you're going to see some relief there. If you have good credit, that's going to benefit you. Since 2020, I think, you know, if you follow our Fox Wheels reporting, we've been kind of nudging people to say, hey, look, it might be good if your car works, if your car's safe, might be good just to hold on to it. And I think many people like that have been feeling like winners. They might not be driving the nicest cars in the world, but they feel like they might have kind of, you know, beat out the system, and as they wait to grab those deals, because the deals have been coming, and we've seen those with dealerships, I'm sure with automakers, kind of across the board, not necessarily across the board. It all depends, particularly domestic, manufacturers where they're trying to get these sales in, and hit numbers with Ford and GM and family pricing and things like that. I mean, there are some opportunities to save money. I guess we're all just kind of waiting to see what happens at the Fed. Whether it happens sooner or later, it's happening. We expect it to happen anyway. And so.
Yeah, the days of the good deals are gone. You know, Jeff, I drive a beater, and it's one of those cars. It's a 20-year-old car, 204,000 miles, got rust holes on the outside. Because I'm just going to drive this thing till it dies, and it's not dying, which is good for me. But it's also one of those cars, if a parent looked at it, they said, there's no way I'm putting my kid in that car. It is questionable at best. I'm guessing there's a lot of people like me that just look for deals, and we're going to be waiting forever, and we'll never find it ever again. The days of looking into the classified section and finding a nice car for $5,000 is over with, it sounds like.
That was me. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. I'm right there with you. I drive an older car too. I was not interested in playing this game with dealers and with, you know, cars and financing and the prices that just ballooned. And my wife drives a nicer car, and you know, my kids are always saying, hey, can we take mom's car? So I'm starting to see that they might be a little embarrassed in it. So I might have to make it. But I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what, though, I feel like I kind of, you know, when I was describing people that may have felt like they kind of won, where they're riding it out, and I feel like I kind of won the battle, and I don't care what people think about me when I'm driving my.
They'll understand later. They'll appreciate what you're doing later in life when they're in that same position, because what you're doing is being financially smart, which is what we've talked about. So many people won't do because they'd rather make sure they have the latest gadgets, the latest iPhone, the latest technology in their car, and it just gets out of hand.
It's true.
Yeah. Yep. And when all the road rage and stuff that's out there. One look at my car, they're going to realize I don't care what you do to this car. So they're going to back down pretty quick. It's a security thing at this point. It works in my benefit. Jeff Manasso, Fox News Radio and Fox Wheels, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Awesome to hang out.
Joining us after the break, we're going to continue with Kim on a Whim. I love segments like this. You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in on 97.1 FM Talk.
Kim on a Whim.
Ryan, it's only been about a week or so since it was announced that CBS was not going to have the Late Show anymore with Stephen Colbert. And obviously, he's been very outspoken, and a whopping like 20 people showed up outside the studio in New York City to protest that when he called for people to boycott CBS, which was just embarrassing. But listen to this. According to the New York Post, Stephen Colbert has already secured his next gig following the cancellation of his show. He's going to portray a late night talk show host in this comedy series that made its debut last summer. He's going to be playing the host of the fictional show Way Late with Scotty Bristol, never even heard of it, and the network spinoff hit The Good Wife. Have you ever heard of that?
No, and I'm Googling it right now. And what network is it on?
It's CBS.
It's on CBS?
It sounds like it's on, yeah, on CBS. It's the network spinoff of it, I guess. I'm just actually learning about this.
This makes sense.
This morning. So the Late Show, I guess, was just doing so. I mean, they were losing millions of dollars every year. So it didn't make any sense for them to continue on with the Late Show. But they're going to have him do this spinoff series.
So this is so stupid. So he's telling them to boycott the network that's trying to hire him to do another gig?
Way Late with Scotty Bristol is what it's called. It's
set to premiere October 2025.
They've already been shooting, though, or at least
CBS. CBS declined to comment on the appearance, and Colbert's representative not issued a statement. So he's telling people to boycott the network that's trying to give him more work after he lost $40 million a year for them?
I guess so.
Are you kidding?
You know, he doesn't want to acknowledge that the reason why they're canceling it is because the ratings are terrible. They want to blame it on everything else. But clearly CBS is having issues, I mean, in every single time slot. Because you look at CBS this morning, and Gayle King, there's been questions about her because she is very clearly left-leaning. I mean, it's not even a question. And listen to this. It says, in the past 3 weeks, Gayle King and her co-hosts have lost between 20% and 30% of their audience versus last year in that 25 to 54-year-old demographic, which is the key demo, I would imagine, for them. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. She went out and did this interview in March with that RuPaul. You know, I'm talking about the RuPaul's Drag Race show or whatever. And she interviewed the winner, Bob the Drag Queen. And they were describing it. CBS Mornings, the website, was describing this book, I guess, that tied into that as a gender-bending story where the historic icon appears in modern-day America. Like, they're playing right into the woke mob nonsense, and people see right through it. People are tired of that, and that's why a lot of these networks are failing. Now, you do have, like, a Greg Gutfeld at night, and Gutfeld is absolutely killing it. It's not like he's middle of the road. He's very clearly right. But I think there's been so much left-leaning propaganda in the media that people are so sick of it. It's really refreshing to see someone like a Greg Gutfeld actually tell the other side.
Yeah. Here's the difference, I think, between Colbert and Gutfeld. And very clearly, you have Colbert had, I think, about 1.7 million viewers or something like that. I'd have to go back and look at where he was before the announcement that he was getting canned. And Greg Gutfeld was about 3 million mm-hmm. viewers. Okay, big difference between the two. Not quite double, but big difference. Colbert has a staff of 200. Gutfeld, I think, has a staff of a dozen. And I think even the Gutfeld stuff's a non-union gig when it comes to the TV side. So you have someone that has over a million more people watching with a fraction of the audience, and they're making money, not losing it. Colbert mm-hmm. was losing $40 million a year doing yep. it. So this show gets shut down. All these people are going to lose their jobs because they're not replacing them with anyone. It's just going to be gone. And he's out there talking about how stupid the company is for not supporting him losing money any longer.
Right.
And all these people are going to be out on the street, you know, all finding another job, maybe. But all these other shows, are they going to, they can't, it's not sustainable for them either. It's not like the audience is just going to move straight over. I don't think they liked it anymore.
But he wants to blame it on Trump, and that's the problem. You're not, you're in La La Land thinking that this isn't being canceled because your ratings are in the toilet. That's why it's being canceled.
Oh, yeah. I think it's a big part of it. And then you go on and talk about how stupid and irresponsible your company is with money. And then they lay, wait a minute, we are stupid and irresponsible for paying you $40 million or losing $40 million a year for this. They just have to understand that. All right, coming up after the break, Tom Ackerman's going to join us a little bit. Talk some sports with him. That'll be fun. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Cox. Don't go anywhere. 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.